Hi everyone, welcome to Happy Health Chat with me, Laura Agar-Wilson from wholeheartedlyhealthy.com and the lovely Kezia Hall from supernaturallyhealthy.org. Today we're going to be talking about the juicy topic of hormones and fertility and all that kind of stuff. So stay tuned for some of that after we've done our little updates. So Kezia, what have you been up to over the last, since the last podcast that we did?
Yeah, it's been it feels like ages ago since we did the podcast. It probably wasn't actually that long. Just what happens when you get into the summer. So, yeah, it's been good. I have some exciting things afoot at Supernaturally Healthy. So me and Laura were both just chatting about websites and designers and rebranding and all that sort of stuff. So I am making a couple of changes just to the site. Well, I say I'm not actually doing it. That would be a total disaster. I'm getting someone who is much better at all that stuff to just make things a bit better. Nothing massive, just making things a bit neater and simpler to navigate, which is really exciting. I love all that sort of stuff. I'm a bit of a geek when it comes to websites and nice navigation and all that sort of stuff. So that's been really fun. I've been making some big changes to my Flourish e-course, which is really exciting. So that's been fun. I've been chatting to various people that have done the course just to get good feedback, like have little one-on-one conversations, which has been really fun actually. I have like a business mentor that suggested that I did that just to really help me make things even better and keep on developing stuff. And it's been really, really fun. And so in August, I will be launching a sort of a rejigged version of Flourish. A lot of stuff will stay the same, but it will mean you can sign up whenever you want and start the course whenever you like. And it's sort of create a deliciously healthy life. So that's been really fun and getting all that sort of stuff rejigged. And because that's happening, I'm taking my one of my ebooks kind of off the virtual shelves. So I'm doing a bit of an ebook bundle at the moment. So that's been fun, just packaging that all together. And it's been a good little while. And I go on holiday this week, so actually by the time you listen to this podcast, hopefully I will be on holiday in sunny Devon.
hopefully so, sunny.
I'm going to say it out loud that it's going to be sunny. Just, you know, make it happen. So that'll be really fun. I think the last week or so, I've definitely, you know, and it's just really hard to get out of bed in the morning. And I'm totally a morning person. And I've started to get like worried, like, oh, is it my adrenals? You know, I think sometimes when you're a health coach, you automatically maybe go to like these slightly more hypochondriac tendencies. And I was like, no, Kezia, you just need a holiday. That's literally it, because I've not had one properly this year. So that is very exciting. So I've been packing and discovering that I don't actually own any shorts at all.
That's like terrible.
None. I know, none whatsoever. But it's pretty probably common for someone who lives in Scotland.
I was just about to say, it's probably, you probably don't need them so much living at where you live.
No, not unless I've got a pair of thermal tights with them. I never wear them. So, but that's pretty much everything that's been happening here. Really, no other massive updates. But what about you, Laura? What's been going on in the Agar-Wilson house?
Kind of similar to you, so kind of planning some kind of busy, kind of upgrady type of stuff. So I'm kind of working on getting a new website kind of all put together, which is really exciting, really, you know, excited about that. Also kind of getting some new pictures of me done, which is kind of making me cringe, is what I was saying to Kezia. It's kind of a bit weird putting yourself in that, like, that kind of space, but hey ho, hopefully we'll have some nice pictures of me.
Oh yeah, that'll be fun.
So just kind of trying to, as well, I think trying to have a bit of downtime over the summer as well, because I think things do kind of quiet down a little bit, so it is nice to just take advantage of that and chill out a little bit. At the moment, I am kind of suffering from a bit of, I think I've bruised ribs. I was just saying to Kezia before, I've had a bit of a cough and a cold. And I think from coughing, I think I've hurt my ribs, so I'm in a bit of pain. So it's kind of put my running on a bit of a hiatus, which is a bit worrying because I've only got like not very long at all for the Great North Run, like 2 months or something, until that's due. So we'll see what happens, although I think I might be walking most of it. We're saying I'll be one of these people who cross the line and after like 5 hours or something of dawdling along through South Shields. But But yeah, and that's kind of everything we've had going on, really. I mean, Finley is now crawling.
Which is
like another, oh yeah, he's been crawling, I think about, it must be a while now he's been crawling.
Oh, really?
Probably not long since, it mustn't have been long after we did the last podcast, okay. I think. And he's just into everything, everywhere, you know, really? He's already nearly had a close shave with the stairs, and oh, it's just,
oh goodness.
A bit of a, yeah, just puts everything else, it's like, oh my god, he's like into everything now.
Which can he unpack stuff as well? He's starting just to pull stuff out of places everywhere.
Oh, totally.
As well.
He's pulling himself up as well. So he's like pulling himself wow. up on top on sofas and not quite coasting, but starting yeah. to coast a little bit. So yeah, so he's really like, I can't believe I've got an almost 11 month old baby.
Wow.
It's mad.
I
really scary. I know.
That's crazy.
Really scary that he's that old, but he's doing really, really well. So that's lovely. And quite appropriate that I finished on Finley, because you are going to be talking about
yes.
fertility and hormones and making babies and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, it is. It's an exciting topic, and I think one that we both have different experiences of. And actually, like me and Laura were just chatting before we started this, a lot of, I assume a lot of maybe clients that you've worked with in mm-hmm. the past, Laura, hormones and fertility has been an issue. I know for me, for myself personally, getting hormones back in balance has been part of my own health journey, as well mm-hmm. as working with clients one-to-one when their hormones are just totally out of whack.
I think generally it's probably the most common thing I see when I work with a client, I would say.
Yeah.
Just some, there's always some level or some degree of hormonal imbalance or hormonal issue, which is behind kind of a lot of the other stuff. And I think because, you know, we kind of do, I think, you know, we run on hormones, us ladies especially, we do. That can have such a massive impact on, you know, weight loss, lack of weight loss, weight gain, tiredness, energy levels, just the whole skin, like everything really, can't they?
Yeah.
It has such a massive impact.
It is massive. And often people don't quite realise how much they rule the roost.
Yeah.
So often when I'm chatting to people, they'll maybe be aware of other stuff, but are not quite aware of how important good hormonal health is. You know, not for all those things you mentioned, like mm-hmm. sleeping, food cravings, losing weight. Like it does. It mm-hmm. really impacts a lot of stuff. So Laura, tell, what's kind of been your own personal kind of story with obviously hormones and fertility? It obviously has a good ending.
It does have a good ending, it does.
We are Finley.
So I went on the pill when I was 18, like most girls, you know, I kind of was in a long-term relationship, went on the pill, and I was on it until I was 28. Yeah. Kind of in the last year that I was on it, I started to suspect something wasn't quite right because I was bleeding in between cycles. I was never on the pill that stopped these cycles altogether. I was on like microgynon or something, so I still kind of had regular periods, or the not periods when you're on the pill. This is very, very important, everyone.
Yeah.
You're not getting a real period when you're on the pill. So I was bleeding in between anyway. And decided to come off it because I knew that James and I would be thinking about starting a family at some point within the next kind of couple of years, at that point when I was 28. And basically I never got a period. It just never came back. Full stop. At the time I was very, very thin. I think I was like on the border of being an unhealthy BMI, like an underweight BMI. And I was exercising a lot, and I was eating a very restricted vegan diet. So there was all that other stuff going on. And basically it took me, like, 4 years to get my periods back? Is that God? Yeah, that's right. I was kind of surprised myself, but I think actually that's how long it has taken me to get it all right. I think three or four years. So it's been quite a bit of a ride. And, I mean, my experience was, so I did a lot of things that I could do to kind of try and rebalance them. And I think the difficulty is it's like you do have to be your own detective a little bit as well, because I think absence of periods can indicate a lot of other things as well, like PCOS, which is polycystic ovary syndrome, which is a lot more common. And I think a lot of the times that's simply what the doctors were kind of saying, oh, well, it's probably PCOS, but you actually haven't got any cysts on your ovaries and you haven't got any other signs of it at all. So it was kind of, it was quite hard for me to overcome them, basically. And I made a lot of lifestyle changes, but ultimately I did have to go down the medicalised route as well. So yeah. I took a medication called Clomid, which made me ovulate. And that was how I eventually got pregnant with Finley. Although I'm saying that, I do still think that when I look at the dates and things from when I fell pregnant, and I mean, the date I was actually due on, and when I took the tablets, I'm not sure whether or not I actually ovulated myself, because it was after Christmas. Sounds a bit... Okay. But it was after Christmas, and I put on a bit of weight over Christmas, as you do, and relaxed over Christmas, and I don't know whether or not I'd actually ovulated on my own.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But anyway, I'd been on clomiphene, or Clomid, as it's also called. So that's kind of my experience of it. And as we were just discussing, I mean, at the moment, I don't have periods either because I'm breastfeeding. But again, it's kind of like, it's still a little bit of a thing for me, because I'm kind of wondering, well, when I stop, what's going to happen? Are they going to come back? Am I still going to have an issue? So that's kind of my experience with them. And what's your experience, Kezia?
Well, I have, my periods have always been a little bit all over the place. When I was at uni and a bit when I was younger, I was on the pill, but not actually for very long because it made me feel a bit crazy. So I think I remember the doctor putting me on it because I was having, I've always had very irregular periods and a bit kind of all over the shop. And so I was on the pill for a while but it made me actually, I think it really made me quite depressed. And I think I was already depressed at the time, so it didn't feed into that anyway, which that's a different blog, podcast in itself, looking at depression. Just very erratic and really quite painful, painful periods, feeling incredibly sick. So like if I would just be, and because there were, then weren't regular, I wouldn't know when I was going to get them, and so if it would just sort of like arrive at, like, I remember once being at a wedding and I literally just had to find a dark room just to sit in until someone could go out and get me some medication to like, I was absolutely on, like, if I was caught out, it was just a disaster. And practically in terms of work, and I couldn't be affording to take time off of work or being like, hi, it's me again, phoning in sick because I can't like get out of bed. So that was when, it was a couple of years ago, and I was kind of reading more and learning more about how, like you were saying, being your own health detective, really, and about looking more at gut health, and then how that not how that impacts your hormones, but you know, they all play a role together, and I don't really know what comes first, to be honest. I don't know if people do, but and so that was really probably only about 2 years ago that I started to be like, okay, I don't think I need to feel horrendously sick every time I have my periods. I don't think I need to go 3 months without a period and then have one every 2 weeks. You know, I wanted it to come back to a bit more normal. So I have to say, things have gotten a lot better, but I'm still probably on a bit of a journey in terms of figuring out a little bit about hormone balance. I think my adrenals and stuff were pretty out for the count. And so having to look at that and really nourishing them. And even now, I think running your own business and kind of starting up your own business, which it can be really stressful. Mm-hmm. So I'm quite aware even now of looking after, kind of guarding my adrenal health, because it's easy to totally burn yourself out, I think, when you're your own boss.
Yeah, definitely.
So easy to do that.
And stress, I think, as we've probably hit on something that's got a massive impact, I think, on hormonal health is stress. And about being aware of what stress it looks like for you, and I kind of say that, but I think it's one of those things. I think I've definitely been on the journey with stress, because I never used to think I was like a stressed out person, but I don't think stress kind of, I think I looked at other people and you could like saw the signs of them being stressed and thought that's what it looked like. But that's not what it looks like to me, if that makes sense.
It's a really good point, because I often chat about that with clients. And it's the same for me. Like I've learned over the years. I'm again like you. I wouldn't describe myself as a stress head. I don't express stress. I'm not like extrovertly, but my body will start to give me signs, and that's how I've learned to trigger that I'm stressed. So at the moment, like I've said before, I've been struggling to wake up in the morning. That's normally a sign that I'm either just tired and need of a break, or a bit stressed, or I get really attractive blotches on my face of dry skin, which is a nice, very obvious slow down, Kezia, or like things like I get ulcers or conjunctivitis. And over the years, I've learned they're like my little like pointers.
The regular rundown stuff, yeah. Yes. I think I did a newsletter not so long ago, and I was kind of talking about kind of those signs of just being run down and stuff, and mine are similar, kind of like recurrent infections, and I get styes on my eye. That's what I tend to get. And also I've got this weird muscle twitch that I get. Oh. That's like my very, that's when I know I'm like really, really, like need a bit of a break.
Yeah.
And again, I think it's just about, I suppose the take away from this is just kind of being aware that stress might not be what, to you, what you think it looks like. And it could be a lot more subtle, but still have the same kind of impact on your kind of like your internal health as well.
Yeah. No, it's true. Maybe we should do a podcast about that one day, Laura.
I think we should, yeah. I think we should probably look at that in a bit more detail, shouldn't we? And I mean, I suppose connected to that as well is not just, like, kind of stress because of, like, situations that you might be in or that you've been put in or whatever, but over-exercising is another form of stress on the body. You know, poor nutrition is another form of, like, if stress, you know, as well, kind of like nutritional stress. So looking at kind of the different forms that might take. And definitely, I think, you know, not all women are designed, I don't know if that's the right word. I don't know what your thoughts on this. I don't think all women are kind of set up to be like long distance runners, for example, and not have hormonal issues as a result of it. I think if I was like, well, I know because I was that person, you know what I mean, running all the time and doing a lot of like real long kind of physical activity where it was like about stamina and stuff. I just don't think that suited my body at all. And I think that's part of the reason I had like such a hormonal imbalance.
No, I definitely agree. I used to do a lot of running and was a bit of a cardio queen, loved running, still do, but I injured myself and had to stop training for half marathons and things. And then, but actually it was as I was at the start of my, okay, let's bring a bit of natural balance back to my hormones, let's try and get my periods regular, I stopped really doing a lot. Pretty much all cardio exercise, actually, especially linking in. I was also aware of my adrenal health at the time as well. And I literally did just stop all cardio for quite strictly for about 3 or 4 months. And I did solely some muscle, like weightlifting stuff and some Pilates, which was really, and like walking, and I was active. I didn't just sit. But I deliberately didn't do anything that got my heart rate, you know, that racing, sprinting, high interval, which I was doing a lot of because, you know, high interval training is brilliant for the body. And it often, it does, but as we were talking about, exercise is a stress to the body and it's just giving it at the right time when you need it and knowing when you don't need it.
I think another really important point there is what is healthy or what is generally thought of to be healthy might not be healthy for you.
Yeah.
And I think this is really important with hormonal health again. So,
definitely.
So just like Kezia said there, you know, like high intensity interval training, healthy. But if you're suffering from, you know, adrenal fatigue or, you know, something or kind of hormonal, hormones where they're going to really react to that, then it's not what you want to be. You know, it's not going to be healthy for you. It might be healthy for the rest of the population, but not for you. And that can be hard. I mean, I was in that place where, you know, kind of not exercising, not running, not even eating, you know, a massively, you know, typical kind of health blogger at the time diet, for example, that was quite hard, you know what I mean? So kind of going from eating lots and lots of raw vegetables to kind of eating more fat and more cooked foods and things like that. And I think that's another, I don't know what your take is on this, but I definitely think that's something that helped me with my hormones, was not eating as much raw food. Weirdly, I mean, there's a lot of stuff kind of in Chinese medicine about that balance and things. And
No, I think you're right. Definitely, I notice it a lot with different clients. Maybe more from like a gut health perspective, but there's often periods of time when, and I have a friend who's a macrobiotic nutritionist, and she's brilliant. She's like, no, it's finding what works for you, but I do think she's like, no, you should never just eat all cooked food or all raw food, and it depends on the season and all of those and so I do think I couldn't tolerate raw food at all, like as in salads and raw vegetables. I couldn't have them, so that makes sense in terms of helping it shift.
And I suppose kind of, because I think part of where that kind of comes in is about the body temperature and kind of that being indicated by your metabolism, because when it comes to hormones, like everything is run on hormones, really, isn't it? When you think about what they are, those kind of messengers in your body that make things do certain things, isn't it? Pretty much. I think a good way to kind of check how your hormones are doing is through temping. I don't know, this is something that you've come across, and this is something that I did quite a lot of, which is basically taking your basal body temperature.
Yep.
So when you wake up in the morning, before you even get out of bed, it's about taking your temperature and charting it. Especially for women, what you should see is a particular pattern of temperatures, in terms of when you ovulate, that your body temperature will rise up a little bit. And it's another way of telling how you're pregnant, because your body temperature would stay high, basically. But also, if you're kind of temping and you're getting very, very low temperatures, that will be an indicator that something's a bit of a miss with your hormones, basically.
No, definitely. Yeah, I have a thermometer by the side of my bed, and I think I've taken my temperature maybe about 5 times.
Yeah, I'm gonna. It is a bit of a pain in the butt, and it is a bit hard to stick to, but it can be. I mean, you can get apps for your phone and stuff now that help you track it.
Well, someone was telling me about that the other day, and I was like, I just haven't got into habit. I really want to, though, just because it can specifically show your, like, thyroid health.
Yes, yeah.
And if, not necessarily, obviously, you know, I know my thyroid isn't over or underactive, like, you know, in terms of those medical extremes, but just if it's a bit below par, like, I think that, again, it's not, you know, it's not a set way of figuring out, but it's an indicator, like, because it's just a really important aspect of thyroid health.
Yeah, and I mean, on the fertility side of things as well, I think it's the best thing you can possibly do, to be honest. If you are kind of thinking about, trying for a baby and stuff, I think it's just the best thing you can do. And generally, I think it's just a really good thing as a woman to be really, like, in tune with your body cycles and things. And I mean, you know, not every, just because you don't have a standard 28 day cycle doesn't mean that you have a hormonal imbalance necessarily. That's just the average, but what you should be looking for is a regularity. And you should be looking for, again, regularity in terms of, like, your ovulation and things like that, which would be indicated by that temperature rise. But there's some really, really good apps that you can get for your phone now that kind of help you track your period and things like that. So you can kind of see where things are falling within that, within that pattern, or the pattern that you would be aiming for, really. So I think that's a really, really useful thing to do when it comes to fertility, especially. And again, I suppose for hormone health and for fertility, it is really about, you know, just eating really nutrient-dense food.
Yes. Yeah, and often some of it is a bit of a cultural thing, I think, we have. So obviously your experience of being very slim, nearly underweight, Laura, and then that impacting your hormones. I think often we, sometimes in order for our bodies to be healthy and well, and our hormones to be healthy and well, especially for fertility, we sometimes, I think, need to be perhaps potentially a different size to what we think we
absolutely
should be.
Yeah.
And I think when you look at more traditional cultures in years past, or even cultures current today that are not, Western cultures, maybe more agricultural, and a lot of the time people go on preconception diets, which is very high fats, incredibly nutrient dense foods, and deliberately to put on actually an extra half a stone, or whatever, before, in order to make conception, fertility, and the pregnancy as smooth as possible. And it's not that I'm saying everyone needs to put on weight in order to get pregnant or to increase fertility or balance hormones, because equally so, if you are overweight, then that can have the same detrimental effect as if you are underweight. So it really is that finding that balance, but it does, and it is that sort of really figuring out what healthy looks like for your body, not what culturally you're being told your body needs to look like.
And I think that extends beyond hormone health. For me, it's like everything.
Yeah.
But I think if you're eating really nutrient dense food, to your natural fullness level, you know, if you feel like you've got a good relationship with food, then that'll take you to that happy kind of place where you're being in good shape for kind of for your fertility, basically. I think that's just really, really important to be doing that. And then there's kind of the usual stuff kind of around, like, supplementation. I mean, we're always advised to kind of have extra folic acid and things like that as well. But, I mean, generally, again, you want to be making sure that you're getting that as folate, which is kind of from leafy green veggies and getting it directly from the source. And that's going to be the most effective. I mean, still take your folic acid, but I would say just make sure that you're getting lots of, you know, food sources and nutrients as well.
Yeah, and I was reading something, and I can't remember the source of it, so I'm not 100% sure if this is from the medical researcher's mouth, but talking about how actually the importance, especially with folate, so often people get pregnant, take folic acid, which I'm not saying is a bad thing to do, but actually the when we need our best sources and storage of folate is before we get pregnant.
Yeah.
Because it's actually once you're pregnant, obviously, you know, there's good things to supplement with, but you actually need a lot of these different vitamins and minerals in good amounts before you get pregnant. Because as soon as you get pregnant, your body goes into, you know,
it's incredibly coming from someone who's obviously been pregnant recently, it's incredibly depleting
it
on your body because the fetus takes
everything.
and again, I mean, this is something to remember when you think about hormone health and fertility, and they are the one and the same thing. I don't look at them separately because you know, to have healthy hormones is to be fertile. To be fertile is to have healthy hormones. What I would say is that it's about, you know, thinking your body needs to think like, you know, it's in a really nice, happy. If you think your body's not going to let you get pregnant if you're under stress, because that would be indicating to your body that you've got like all these crazy things going on and it's not safe for you to have a baby. And you know, there has to be like an excess of nutrients and, you know, lovely calm. But this is it. I mean, you know, we are primal bodies living in a modern world.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. That's definitely one thing that the paleo movement's got right.
Yes.
Because it is true. So I think if you think of it from that point of view, it kind of changes things a little bit. So I think that's definitely something to think about is whether or not you feel that your body is offering that. But I don't think it's worth us kind of chatting a little bit about PCOS, because that tends to be the most prevalent thing that I see. I don't know whether or not you see a lot of that, but
I
think some women, like, sometimes I can just read like the information that they give us before we start working together, and I know if they're going to be that kind of type.
Yes.
Because I think there's like a PCOS type, and I think, you know, it's characterised by certain things. And I do think it's kind of one of those things that just seems to be like I know so many people who have had, or who have that.
Yeah. It's very common. No, it is, and I think, and it's difficult because I think lots of people I know who have had PCOS, or people I've worked with, have often maybe discovered that they have that and then been told just to go onto the pill.
Yeah.
And so then often, I don't know what you think about this, but I generally think the pill's not always a great idea from my experience and from research. Obviously,
I'll go out and out and say the pill's absolutely crap and stay away from it. But I shouldn't say that, because obviously at the end of the day, you know, everyone's got to make their own decision based on their unique circumstances. And at the end of the day, if that's your best way of preventing unwanted pregnancy or whatever, that's fair enough.
but it does cause havoc for the body. For gut health, your kind of gut microbiome, your hormone balance. So I know for so many people have had PCOS, it's almost like they've just been then told to go onto the pill, and then they kind of think everything's normal, but then they have the existing health and hormonal issues that have led to PCOS, plus maybe 5, 6, 7 years of being on the pill and training their body to get specific kind of artificial hormones every day, which, you know, your body adapts to, but not always in a great way.
Yeah.
And that in itself then impacts so many other different aspects of health. So I think often it can be quite tricky, and people feel like there's not a lot they can do if they have PCOS.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas actually I think there's a lot of stuff you can actually do to really help to support the body in having good hormonal health and producing the right hormones and all of those different sorts of things. And I do think an ongoing healthy diet and lifestyle massively, massively impacts it.
I think diet especially for PCOS, and I think kind of, I think that's a particular kind of medical thing where a low sugar diet tends to be, you know, balancing blood sugar levels and things tends to really help it. And certainly help with the weight stuff. And I think this is my little gripe for the day anyway, is that, you know, we say a lot now, you know, all these, like, really healthy, you know, there's lots of healthy cookbooks and lots of healthy food and stuff, but sometimes it's not enough just to eat healthy. That's kind of my... This is something that's really coming up for me at the moment, and a lot, with a lot of people who I'm working with, is that, you know, it's not just enough to kind of eat healthily. Sometimes, if you've got a particular constitution, you know, kind of having, like, you know, chickpea salads or whatever every day isn't going to cut it.
Yeah.
And I think that's where, you know, with, certainly with PCOS, is one of those ones where you do need to kind of look at your blood sugar level balance and things as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and go a bit deeper often, mm-hmm. and you know, that can be going down a more medical route and getting some good testings and all of that sort of stuff, looking at, you know, why is it out of whack, looking more at some targeted kind of supplementation and maybe getting a bit of a bespoke supplementation plan by someone who knows a bit of your health history and your body and all that sort of stuff, as well as more... Like, it's kind of more lifestyle shifts almost of stress. And just time and time again with clients, when it's maybe to do with a hormone balance, actually, it's clients that are maybe following and eating incredibly well, taking some really good supplements, but are stressed out of their nut and so aren't getting better and aren't sleeping and all of those different things. And it really, you know, it's kind of come full circle.
I suppose it is just that reminder, I think, for all of us, that it's like you can do one thing, one part of the equation, if you can do one part of the equation really, really well, but if you're missing something somewhere else. And I'm going to say, that's wholeheartedly healthy. Because that is kind of where I came from with the wholeheartedly healthy thing. But it is, I mean, that's the honest truth. I mean, you can eat all the kale you want.
Yeah.
It's not going to make any difference if you're stressed to hell and if your sleep's absolutely out of the pot.
Yeah.
And I know what I mean. At the end of the day, I know that my lack of sleep is massively impacting on my health and well-being, but I'm doing what I can do because I know that it's just part of the phase of life that I'm in. You know what I mean, with having a baby. So... it's kind of, you know, it is about just looking, making sure that you look at things holistically, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's why we kind of do what we do, I suppose. Yeah. So sometimes it is hard, actually, to be that health detective, to find out what's going on, to try different things, to have, you know, and actually having someone like me and Laura do with our clients to guide people through. And this isn't to plug what we do, but just actually whoever it is, it doesn't need to be us. You know, just finding somebody, it might be a good GP, it might be just a friend, it might be a partner, it might be a health coach or a nutritional therapist, you know, whoever it is, that can actually just really help to guide you through. Learning to understand and listen to your unique body and the communications it's giving to you does take time, and it almost takes a bit of adjusting to, and it is completely possible, but it does take a while, and often just someone to support you with that does make just a massive difference. Like I realized for me, there's a couple of health things that I was just wanting to get checked up on, and I was like, oh, I need someone. I am my own health detective. I give out advice and I know a lot of stuff, but I need someone to be my health advocate as well.
So I
signed up to go to see someone when I get back from holiday, just to be that guide. And
I think at a different level, I think it's, at the end of the day, we both believe in the process of coaching and how effective it is, and it makes sense for us to both, you know, have that ourselves as well, doesn't it?
It's
the best way to practice what you preach.
always. and so, Laura, in terms of, like, supplementation, what have you tried, or in terms of your journey for sorting out your hormones?
A few different things. Trying to think of where to start with them. Definitely B vitamins, and making sure that there's, you know, having some good quality B vitamin supplementation.
Yeah.
I also did something called seed cycling.
Oh, yeah.
Which I've heard a lot about.
I've heard of that.
And I'll put a link for us to put to below to the thing that I use, but it's basically about using a different kind of, what's the word, different ratios of ground up nuts and seeds that are supposed to have natural there's a pot away from them, I can't remember.
Phytoestrogens?
Yes, something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
That basically kind of supposed to very, very gently kind of nudge your hormones in the right direction.
Yeah.
So that's really, really interesting. I'm trying to think about, I was just generally making sure I had plenty of vitamin D. I also used something called, since I'm having to think really hard, what was it called again? Was it Soya Lecithin? There's basically, I'll have to put a link to it because I can't remember exactly what it's, I think it's Soya Lecithin, if that's how you say it. But it has high amounts of choline in, which is really good for babies' brain development, so it's worth kind of taking that just if you get pregnant. I think it's like the one soya thing that isn't kind of hideously bad for you.
Yes.
To help see it.
Yeah.
But there's some really, really good places where I got a lot of excellent information from. One was Natalie Kiringoulis. Okay. Her website is really, really good. She's got some excellent information on there. She's just like, to me, she's like the hormone queen. She's really, really good. Dr. Sarah Gottfield as well.
She's brilliant. Stuff.
She's really, really good. She's got some excellent stuff, especially for kind of like, you know, kind of women who might be pushing menopause type thing, which we haven't covered here really when we've talked, but we're kind of making that massive presumption that our listeners are a little bit younger. But Sarah Gottfield's got some really excellent stuff.
She has a good quiz as well for helping you nudge you in the direction of roughly what
it might be.
Yeah, which is quite a helpful resource as well.
Yeah, Taking Charge of Your Fertility as well is a massive big book. And that kind of goes over the fertility awareness method of contraception. Which is really, really interesting. And really it takes you through like the tempin, the whole thing that I was talking about with the tempin and everything like that. So I'm just kind of listing off things. I'll go off the top of the supplements now. I'm trying to remember what else I was taking as well. There was tried a herb and I can't remember the name of it now. This is baby brain talking, but I've lost all my memory things.
That's all right.
What is it called? I have to start checking my
Chaseberry?
It's not. Vitex it's called. That's kind of like the
It's Chaseberry
or Angus Cactus.
Angus Cactus. It's got a million names, it's really confusing.
Yeah. Angus Cactus, that's the one. Yeah, so I tried that, and again, it was kind of like, for me, I think I tried acupuncture as well.
Oh, yes.
Which I think did a lot for me, kind of like relaxing and stuff, but I actually found Reiki was a lot more relaxing for me.
Okay.
So again, it's kind of like, figuring out what's going to particularly work for you.
Yeah, because I know a lady I know who does reflexology, she gets lots of people coming to her for fertility for that, and sees often quite a lot of good results, depending, on the different people.
Yeah.
But no, I think those are a good round of supplements. I think you mentioned vitamin D. Often the best source of vitamin D, obviously, is getting out in the sunshine in sensible ways, but I also sometimes take fermented cod liver oil.
I was just about to say that was the other thing that I took.
There we go. Yep. So I have had phases of taking that, because that's also a good source of vitamin A and vitamin D, as well as your omega 3s, which is, that's a good one of that. And I took Angus Cactus as well, and that really helped. Mm-hmm. That's a bit of a slow burner. Often I find it's not one that, you know, if you take it in 2 weeks, you're going to notice a difference, but it's more sort of like 4 to 5 months, or, you know, obviously everyone's body's different. But it has made a difference with me in terms of taking that, as well as, you know, other things, stopping cardio, all that sort of stuff. And my cycle's now sort of regular and on the dot. So that I still take that just every night before going to sleep. And I think magnesium can help with balance and hormones out as well. So whether that be magnesium oil spray or putting it in your bath, or you can get magnesium supplements. I prefer an oil spray in a bath just because it's nice to take. Any excuse to have a bath. And so that often really will help with, I mean, that helps with loads of things, especially people who are constipated. Magnesium is also another good winner for that. But can help with sort of supporting hormonal health. So again, all of those things are things that we've tried, and just to remind all our wonderful listeners, your body is different, and it's worth, you can't out-supplement a good diet, and your body will need different things. So that's often why it's good to, to kind of work with someone through that. But I think that's a good list in general of stuff that will just help the body, but really also help support more hormonal health.
Yeah. I just remembered another, sorry, I'm just looking at some of my notes from clients and things I work with. Another really good place to get kind of useful hormonal health kind of advice is paleo for women. Don't get too hung up on the paleo side of it, but Stefanie, who writes that, is awesome. She's just like a real, I mean, kind of like on the self-love type side of things as well. Stefanie's just, she's fab. But she's really, really good, and she's written some excellent blog posts, certainly on, I didn't even mention actually the thing that I believe I was suffering from, but hypothalamic amenorrhea is what I believe I was suffering from. But she's wrote some excellent stuff on PCOS as well, so she's really, really good. Definitely worth kind of checking her out as well. And if I think of anyone else, any other really good sources, but I mean, they are some really, really good.
There's a lot of stuff out there, I think, in terms of more natural approaches to really helping sort out hormones, and actually loads of great testimonials of people who've managed to do that as well. And time and time again, but I suppose it is worth noting, I feel like it is one of those things that does take time.
It definitely takes time, yeah. I think you've got to be, I mean, I think if I'd given it a little bit longer, I think I probably would have managed it without having to have medical assistance as well with the clomiphene. But at the end of the day, it's like, it's your life, you know? I mean, and I think there's nothing wrong with doing both. So, like, what I did, which was manage, you know, obviously do a lot kind of nutritionally and lifestyle-wise, but also add in that, because for me, I was getting impatient, which probably didn't help with the stress, to be honest. And it is hard, and I mean, anyone listening to this, you know, if you're wanting to have, you know, wanting to start a family and you're worried that it's not happening, it is really, really stressful, and it's very, very hard to implement this whole kind of non-stress thing when you're kind of thinking that you're infertile, and that's where I was for a long time. And I think if you think, you know, although, you know, give it time and it will, you know, if it's certain things, I'm sure it'll help, but there's nothing wrong with doing things hand in hand.
Yeah.
And supporting yourself nutritionally through that is even more important, because a lot of kind of medication stuff is going to be depleting as well. Yeah. So hopefully that's been helpful for a lot of people.
Yeah, no, hopefully. Well, I think it's been good. We've kind of talked through a little bit of our story, gone through a bit of fertility, a bit of kind of generally regulating hormones, a bit of PCOS and our supplementation. So I think the main sort of stuff that we talked about is sort of getting your diet sorted, and getting to that sort of healthy weight, whatever that looks like for you, maybe working with someone to really help guide you through a more supplementation plan, and really that if you really want to see that shift in your fertility, shift in your hormones, it's kind of being in it for the long haul. And we'll put various links to different articles that we've written below this. But we'd love to get your feedback if you have any more questions about this. I feel like it's quite a big topic. We should probably talk about it.
I think we definitely need to talk about stress.
Yeah,
in another podcast.
And then how, I suppose, even like, I know a lot of people's main problems with hormone imbalance is because of acne and how it impacts that. I've worked with a few clients where that.
Blimey, we were just totally kind of didn't get into the skin.
Yeah, but it massively impacts that, not just on your face, but just overall whole adult acne can, I know, affects a lot of people and it's not very pleasant. As well as looking at even when maybe when you do get pregnant, you know. How do you support that and after it and all that sort of stuff. So if you have any questions about that, then feel free to either tweet Laura or I, or put something on our Facebook pages, or head over to their Happy Health Chat Facebook page. And if you're not on Laura or myself's emails, then I recommend you sign yourself up, because they're full of freebies and discounts and fun and good banter and chat. Just head over to either wholeheartedlyhealthy.com and sign up there, or supernaturallyhealthy.org and sign up for mine. And you get loads of freebies as well. We like to give things away. And we just like that. And make sure you stay tuned for our next podcast and our various different kind of developments happening with our websites. But thanks so much for listening and for joining us today, and we will catch you very soon for another Happy Health Chat.
Yes. Bye.
Bye.